welcome back to another episode of Brit Strapped. We've got a bit of a different podcast today as Martin is on holiday. So I am thankfully joined by Andy Bryce today. So Andy, do you want to give us a quick intro to yourself?
Yeah, hi there. So I've been a full-time micro ISV or independent software vendor for 10 years now, or 10 and a half years. And my main product is a table planner for events called Perfect Table Plan. But I also have a sideline in consulting and training, although that's quite a small part of my business compared with the products. And I've recently launched another product called Hyperplan, which is a sort of visual planning tool.
Very cool. So you're a fellow bootstrapper then?
Yeah, very much so. I started the business, I think I lent myself, I made a director's loan of about £2,000 or £3,000 to get my business started, and I've never borrowed a penny from the bank.
Very good. So what did you do before you worked for yourself?
I did a physics degree where they taught us Fortran 4 no less, which dates me a bit. And then when I came out of university, there weren't a lot of jobs going around, a bit like at the moment, I guess, for graduates. And there was a big call towards the military sector for someone who had a physics background and was interested in programming, but I didn't really want to write code that killed people for a living. So I went into doing operational research type software for paper mills, working for a very eccentric academic. And then from there, and that was in Fortran, and from there I moved on to doing satellite image processing in C and Fortran, sort of stretching satellite images to fit over maps and some other interesting stuff. And then I worked on a printed circuit board design product for a guy who looked exactly like the pointy head boss from Dilbert and behaved similarly. And then I worked in environmental modeling, nuclear safety and compartmental models and things like that, writing software for doing the modeling. And then I worked for a dot-com company doing programming tools. And then, so after 20 years of working with various other people in sort of small to medium-sized companies, I'd had enough of that, and I started working for myself.
So that's some pretty hardcore computer science type stuff, rather than, you know, some of the email marketing CRUD type applications that a lot of people are working on these days.
Yeah, I've always been interested in sort of maths and physics and optimization and visualization and sort of the hardcore techie end of things. And so most of the software I've written has been sort of number crunching and visual display. And I like that sort of stuff. I think in my entire career I've written probably about 5 SQL statements, and I've never really written a CRUD application or sort of an accounts application or a lot of the standard stuff that people do.
Right, you've done a to-do list application type thing. We'll come on to that later. So what were the triggers that led you to wanting you to run your own business or work for yourself?
I think after 20 years of working for other people, I just got a bit, you know, just a bit fed up of working for other people, and I just, you know, wanted to strike out on my own. I think it was as simple as that, really.
And what was your first idea? Was the table planning software the first thing you came across?
Yeah, that sort of fell into my lap, really. Things weren't going that well at the dot-com company I was at. They were sort of running out of money, and things were looking a bit ropey, and they were looking to... So I took an offer to go part-time, so I was just working for them a few days a week, which gave me some extra time. And my wife and I were planning our wedding at the time, and so I thought, well, I'll earn a few brownie points by offering to do the table plan for the reception, because, you know, it sounds like an interesting little optimization problem. And we had 60 people coming to the wedding reception, and everybody got on. There were no sort of, you know, messy divorces or family feuds or anything to worry about. And it was a complete nightmare to do it. And we, you know, you ended up with like a table of 3 and a table of 10. And, you know, to try and actually come up with a sort of a near optimal seating plan, I thought was really difficult. So I thought, well, there must be software to do this. And I looked around, and there were a few desktop software packages, but they were pretty poor and they were very badly marketed. And they all looked a bit abandoned. So I thought, well, I'll just write my own one, of course, being a programmer. And then when things just weren't going that well at the dot-com company, they were sort of struggling, I thought, well, maybe I could sell this. So That's how it started, really. I'd written a very rough version just to use for our own wedding, and I worked like crazy for a few months to sort of smooth off the rough edges and throw it out there as a commercial product. And to my amazement, it started to sell immediately. I think I sold one in the first 24 hours. With no mailing list or anything. I just put it up on a wedding website. I didn't even have any payment processing set up then. So that's really how it started. And I didn't think that I'd be able to make enough from that one product to make a living. So I thought I'd have to have a big portfolio of products, and that would just be one of them. But 10 years later, it's still doing great. And that's responsible for the vast majority of my income still.
So you were scratching your own itch then initially to start with to kind of generate your own table plan for your own wedding?
Yeah, very much so. And all the products I've produced have really been scratching my own itch. And there's just that sort of leap of faith that, okay, I need this. Hopefully somebody else needs it as well. If you read a lot of the literature and blogs, people talk a lot about product validation. They make it sound very easy, or you just throw up a landing page and you spend a little bit of money on AdWords and you'll soon find out if anyone wants it or not. I mean, my experience is that it's not that easy, especially if your product's a bit different to everything else that's out there. It's not that easy to know whether it's something that will fly or not. And so pretty much what I've done for all my products is try to chuck something out there fairly quickly that was a bit rough around the edges and then see if there was any interest.
So were you still working at the .com and working on the table planning software for a little while at the same time then?
Yes, I was working in parallel. So I was working for them part-time, I think 3 days a week or something. And then as the table planning software started to sell, then I sort of tailed off the work that I was doing at the .com company and started working for myself full-time.
So did you kind of actually sit down with your wife and have a conversation, and how did that go in terms of, I think I can make a living out of table planning software?
Yeah, very much so. And she was very supportive. In fact, all my friends and family have been very supportive. There was a plan B, that if things hadn't worked out, then I would have had to have gone back into full-time employment or contracting or something. So I had a certain runway of savings. We had a reasonable amount of savings, so I could afford to take a year before things would start to get a bit tight. So I had a reasonable sort of cushion of savings, and it did much better than expected. Things started to take off, and within about a year or so I was making a similar amount per month in sales to I'd been getting previously in salary. So after that I haven't really looked back.
I think we're quite lucky, aren't we? Because, a lot of my friends who see myself as being self-employed or running the company think it's a big risk to take. But I've always got the view of there's always contracting to fall back on. And as long as you are a good developer, there always is work around there for you if you need it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And everything has risks. If you're in full-time employment, your employer can turn around and sack you tomorrow. So, you have risk there. Once you have a company like mine that's been going for a while and you've got tens of thousands of customers, I'd say that my risks are pretty low. The chance of everyone just suddenly deciding overnight that they don't want my product anymore is pretty low. There are risks. For example, Google could de-index me, and that would really hurt. There's no reason why they would do, but that doesn't mean they won't. Of course, there are always risks, but the biggest risk is that nobody will want your software. And there are so many people, bootstrappers that I've come across, that have been sort of beavering away in secrecy for years without showing anything to anyone, ready to do their big launch. And there's a very real risk that nobody's going to want what they've produced, or that they won't be able to reach the people that do want it. That's the biggest risk. And I've seen various surveys that quantify that most businesses fail simply because nobody wants what they've produced.
So the the IT world and the web was a different place. Well, how many years? 12, 13 years ago. Who were the role models and success stories that back when you started that you kind of drew inspiration from?
Well, a couple of friends of mine had started their own software business and been quite successful. So I knew it was possible. There were people in my circle who'd done it. and although they'd taken on employees and sort of grown the company rather than staying as just them. So I knew it was possible. I guess in the early days, I read a lot of stuff by Joel Spolsky and Eric Sink, and that was very helpful, you know, pointing me in the right direction. And also, I hung out a lot on forums like the Business of Software that had a lot of useful information on it, and I'm still on there now as a moderator.
So Martin and I, quite often on the podcast, come up with the shiny new thing that Martin calls it, where he's working on his current idea, but it, you know, a new idea pops into his head and he wants to go away and work on that for a week or two, and then in the next episode we've got another shiny idea. How do have you managed to keep your interest going for 10 years in the table planning software and keep the motivation there to keep working on it and keep making it better?
Well, I think once you, I mean, we're all vulnerable to that shiny new thing syndrome, including me. But once you've got customers and you've got people emailing you and saying, oh, you know, I really wish it could do this, or you've got some potential big sale that you could get if only it would do, that maybe you lost because it couldn't do this thing, that's a big incentive to keep working on it. And also when it's providing sort of 90-95% of your income, you know, it tends to focus your mind a little. So I mean, you know, I have spun off other products and diversified, and I have, you know, training and consulting and blogging and other things that I do as well. But Perfect Table Plans, what makes the money? So, you know, that's where my main focus is.
Is it just a one-off purchase price, or do you charge ongoing maintenance and support?
It's a one-off purchase, because I mean every market's a bit different. In my particular market, a lot of people buy it, they're buying it for their wedding or bar mitzvah. They're going to use it once and they're probably not going to use it again, or at least they hope they're not going to use it again. So it's a one-off purchase. But some of the professional wedding planners and event planners will buy it, and then when I release a major upgrade, they'll pay to upgrade, so from like version 4 to version 5. So I do have a sort of steady income from my regular users as well, and some of them have upgraded from version 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to the current version 5.
Have you you mentioned you've got a big mailing list now of customers. Have you thought of building, you know, I'm not sure what follow-on product you could build for a wedding. So like I say, it's a one-off event, isn't it? But have you thought of, you know, monetizing that list and that customer set more?
Well, I did joke that the follow-on product was either going to be Perfect Baby Planner or Perfect Divorce Planner. But I've decided not to pursue either of those. Actually, the idea I had for a sort of, I did have some crazy idea for a sort of a baby logging application, because people with small, do you have kids yourself?
We've got 1 2-year-old and one more on the way. So
okay, so you can probably relate to this. But in those early days, you're quite obsessed about, you know, how often they've, you know, how much sleep they've had, how much they've drunk, how much they've output, for want of a better word, you know, to make sure that they're healthy and everything's okay. So I did think about a sort of a baby type logging application where you could keep a detailed diary, you know, to make sure that everything was okay. But then I found that somebody else had done something pretty exactly close to what I was thinking of, and they were giving away for free or very cheap, so I didn't bother with that.
I was going to say, going back to when Isabel was small, kind of with the sleep deprivation, all the days merge into one, don't they? And you kind of forget whether they've had their medication and drunk enough and those kind of things.
Yeah, well, that was exactly the thing I wanted. Maybe slightly obsessive compulsive, but I wanted, you know, to keep track of. I think we did it on paper in the end, which, of course, is, you know, the software developer's great enemy, just scribbles on a piece of paper. I seem to spend half my career trying to stop people, you know, scribbling things on pieces of paper or using Excel.
So you've managed to keep it as just yourself, Andy Bryce, in the company. Did you set out with that goal of it always just being you, or did you ever have a plan to take on people and grow the business?
Yeah, I planned to keep it as just me. And I mean, quite a long time ago, I could have started to take on employees and grown the sort of headcount, but I made a very conscious decision not to do that. I mean, technically, there are two employees, because the company also employs my wife as a bookkeeper and proofreader. So she works part-time for the business as well, but I don't have any plans to take on anyone else. And then the reason for that is that I've sort of created a job that I really like that involves the things that I like doing, particularly programming, and, you know, I quite enjoy some aspects of the online marketing. And if I was to take on from being a pretty good marketer and programmer to being probably a pretty lousy manager, I managed people a little bit in when I worked for people in the past, and I don't think I was very good at it. I was a bit of a micromanager, and so I wasn't terribly good at delegating. So I've tried to create the perfect job for me, and that's been my goal. I mean, if I took on loads of other people, suddenly I've got all these mouths to feed. I have to probably have an office building, and I have to turn up and make sure they're all there, and then I have to check they're doing what they're doing, and probably I have to give them all the interesting work, you know, all the things that I like doing. And you know, if the sales drop down a bit, then you know, potentially I have to fire people. It just sounds like a huge amount of stress and red tape for me. So I'm much happier just working on my own.
Have there been instances where you've kind of had product ideas or marketing ideas that you've thought were really good and would help bring in lots of income, but you've had to kind of scale back that idea, or perhaps put it on the back burner because it would have led to perhaps, you know, needing employees and changing direction slightly?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got an idea at the moment for a SaaS business app that I think, you know, potentially has some good potential, but I would need, you know, to partner with other people or take on employees, people who have the sort of the web skills, the server side skills and things to push it forward, because that's not an area that I have much experience in. My background's very much in desktop programming and C++. So I have to fit the cloth, cut the cloth to fit. When you're only one person, you can only do so much. But you know, if you keep on chipping away at it, you can still do a lot. So I mean, if you look at Perfect Table Plan now, I think it's well over 100,000 lines of code, and it's got, I think, by far the greatest depth of sort of features and functionality compared to any of its competitors, even though it's only me working on it. I mean, I have a competitor who I won't name, that have some 65 employees, have a web-based direct competitor to me, and it still doesn't seem to do half the thing that Perfect Table Plan does.
And I saw a blog post on your blog. You don't mind the term lifestyle business or lifestyle programmer, I think.
I mean, a lot of people see that as a bit of an insult, and if you watch Dragon's Den or whatever, they're a bit derisory sometimes. You can see they'll sort of curl their lip a bit when they say lifestyle business. But I mean, the thing is, the venture capitalists, they want the go big or go home, you know, 100 times or go bust type business. That's what they make their money on. So I'll have a big portfolio of maybe 100 businesses, and one or two of them will be hugely successful, perhaps, you know, Dropbox or Google or Airbnb type successful, and most of the rest of them will go bust or just do nothing. And so they're spreading their risk across all of these companies who are swinging for the fences. So it's a nice business for them, but it's a pretty hideous business for the actual founders, because most of them are going to, you know, work crazy hours for years and then have nothing at the end of it. And so for someone like me, who's just trying to make enough to make a decent living and who's only trying to change the world in a very small way, for, you know, in a very small niche, they're just not interested in that. They can't make any money off me, so of course they're going to be a bit rude about lifestyle businesses.
So what does your typical working day look like now then?
Well, it varies a lot. So I mean, typically, I'm not really a morning person like a lot of programmers. So I try and get up before my son goes off to school, and work for a few hours, and then maybe go to the gym, go for a run. There's a lake near me that I quite like to run around, listen to podcasts and things, and then work a few more hours, have lunch with my wife, work a few more hours, then my son comes home from school, and then you know, see him for a while, and then work a few more hours. And then take most of the evening off, maybe answer a few emails over the evening. And then sometimes, especially if I'm trying to get a new release out, I might do a few hours late at night while everyone else is asleep. So it varies a great deal. I mean, some days I'll spend most of the day doing chores and things, because I like to get my chores done during the week when everyone else is at work. But I mean, I took a month off and went to New Zealand with my family earlier this year, and I was working about half an hour to an hour a day, just answering emails for a month, just keeping things ticking over. I mean, I couldn't do that for sort of month after month, I think, without the business suffering. But, you know, I can do that for a month or so without any problem.
Does your wife not mind about you working in the evenings? Because you've got an office down the bottom of the garden, haven't you? I think
that's right. Well, no, she's asleep, so so she doesn't get. She's more of a morning person, so that works really well. So I'm sort of fine often working at sort of midnight, one in the morning, and she's sort of, you know, she's finished by about 10 in the evening, but it works quite well. So she gets up when our son gets up and looks after him, and I don't get dragged out of bed at 7 in the morning.
But you have, because you've got the office down in the garden, I guess you do have a bit of separation between, you know, work and family place.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm about 10 metres from the house, maybe a bit more, and it's just me and the squirrels, basically. So, yeah, it's lovely and quiet down here, and I can just focus on work. And then when I've had enough of work, I can just walk up to the house.
So what you mentioned there's another product you've got out, and you do some training as well. Do you want to just go over that?
Yeah, so I have another product, Hyperplan. So I had this sort of, shiny new thing idea burning a hole in the back of my head. And it started because when we moved to this house 5 years ago, we had to do a lot of renovation work on it. And we had the old post-it note plan stuck to the wall, you know, of who was doing what when, and the plumber was doing this in this room, and the electrician was doing that room, with the dates and things. And it was quite unmanageable after a while, and sometimes you'd want to have a column for each room and a row for each trade, and then sometimes you want to have a row for the person that was organizing it and a column for when it was done, and it was just proved quite unwieldy. So I thought, oh, it'd be great if there was a piece of software that could do this sort of post-it note type visual planning, but was much more flexible. So that's what I've written. I started working on it within the last year or so, and I launched it within about 5 weeks of starting on it. And to start with, I didn't charge for it. I just, because I wanted to find out if anyone would use it for free. So it was just launched with sort of a suicide pills. When you started, it said it will die on this date. And then on this date, there'll either be another version, or, you know, or a pay version, or it will be free. Mm. And people started to show some interest in it, and some friends and contacts started to using it. And I started getting some feedback, enough to make me think it was worth continuing with. So I've continued to develop that, just released version 1.5. And that's going quite well. I'm only sort of doing it part-time around Perfect Table Plan. And I'm not sort of doing a lot of marketing beyond pushing it to the Perfect Table Plan customers, because obviously they're all planning something, so there's some potential crossover there. So that's my second product at the moment, and I'm quite pleased with how that's going so far. You also mentioned the training, so. A few years ago, I thought it'd be interesting to. I mean, just I like to have some variety in my work. And you know, I do some consulting online via Skype to people and help them mainly with their marketing of their products, and try and come in and say, well, with my experience, this is what I'd do next, and these are the things I would try, and these are what I think are the things that you could do better at the moment, looking at, you know, things like positioning and how they're marketing it, and their AdWords and lots of other things that they're doing. And quite a lot of themes emerge from that. Problems that people would have were often quite common from one person to the next. And so I thought it'd be interesting to create a training course to help people and to teach some of the things that I've learned over the last 10 and a bit years. So I've created a training course. Now most training courses these days are sort of video, you know, through Udemy or whatever. And I didn't really want to do that. I wanted it to be an in-person training course, because I think you could, you know, the communication face-to-face is much better. And it also means that all the other people in the room could learn from each other, because they're all in the same boat trying to bootstrap a business. So I started an in-person training course, and I've run it twice now, and I'm running it for a third time on the 10th and 11th of October at a conference venue just outside Swindon. So if anyone's interested in that, do contact me. If you go to my successfulsoftware.net blog and click on the training tab, it will tell you quite a lot more about it.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll include a link to that as well on the show notes as well. So if people are interested, then they can take a look.
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues about doing it face-to-face, I mean, this morning we were trying to hook up this call, and it took us 10 minutes just to get Skype working, didn't it? Can you imagine if you were trying to do that remotely to like 20 or 30 people, you know, one of them would continually be dropping out or having microphone problems or just a nightmare. So I think it's much better to get people in one place. And also it's nice for me, given that I work on my own all the time, to get out of the office occasionally and meet people.
That follows into one of the questions I was going to ask later on, but I'll ask it now. How do you manage, well, this is something I struggle with as well myself, how do you manage sometimes the loneliness of working from home and by yourself?
Well, I mean, when I'm working, I'm very much focused on the job. And when I'm not working, I'm, you know, up talking to my family or doing things. So, yeah, I don't really find it a problem. And also, I mean, how many extrovert developers do you know? We tend to be a fairly introverted bunch. But, I mean, sometimes, you know, you do think, well, it'd be nice to get out and have a, you know, meet with my peers a bit more. So I do go to conferences. I went to the Business of Software conference in Cambridge earlier in the year, and I'm going to the MicroConf in Barcelona later. As I say, I do the consulting, and I interact with people a lot online through a couple of forums, the Business Software Forum and the bootstrap.fm forum. And also with my customers, and I speak to them on the phone sometimes. And so there is quite a lot of interaction. I've also recently started a meetup in Swindon, which you can find out about if you're interested. It's Bootstrap Southwest, Southwest Bootstrappers. I can't remember exactly. If you go to meetup.com and search for it, I'm sure you'll be able to find it. Perhaps you can put a link on the website. And so that's just a sort of networking event for people who are bootstrapping software products to meet up. So we had the first one about a month ago, which you came to, and we're having another one in a month or so. I can't remember the exact date, but I will publish it on my blog nearer the time. So if anyone's sort of anywhere within driving distance of Swindon and is interested in coming along to meet some fellow bootstrappers, whether you're sort of super successful and making loads of money, or if you're still at the early stages and, you know, don't even have an idea yet, but just interested in bootstrapping a business, do come along and meet us. I think we had about 15 or 16 people at the first event, so it went pretty well.
Yeah, and Martin and I really enjoyed it. Yeah, we came when you were living, where was it you were living before? High Wycombe.
High Wycombe, yeah.
Yeah, we remember we came years ago to that as well, and I know you said if you live near Swindon, I know Kevin Taylor came down, didn't he, from Steel Beam Calculator, and he lives in Derbyshire, so people are certainly keen to meet up with their peers and discuss various problems and network and stuff, so it's good fun.
Yeah, I mean, I've got people coming for the training course from abroad, right. One's even, without going into too many details, one's even coming from a different continent, so yeah, people do, people do travel.
So without giving away everything you're going to cover in the training, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you started?
Well, it's quite hard to obviously summarize 10 years experience in a soundbite. Somebody asked me the other day what had I learned about entrepreneurship that I could put into a tweet. So I put start small, start now. But obviously that's glossing over a few details. So I mean, in the course I've tried to cover a really wide range of stuff, things like finances, starting a company, market validation, VAT, payment processing, upgrade strategies, trial strategies, A/B testing, positioning, differentiation, AdWords, SEO, you know, the list goes on and on. I think there's about 465 slides, 10 exercises, and lots of interaction. But there is a lot to learn. Ideally, you need to know the basics, you need to know the theory, you need to know all the sort of legal and financial ramifications and tax and all that sort of stuff. And then after that, you need to learn your market, because every market's different. So you could go to somebody else and you could find out everything they know, but it wouldn't necessarily apply in your market. The general principles of human psychology and online marketing are pretty universal, and they apply, but you have to apply it differently depending on your market and your particular strengths. So, for example, if you're really good on Twitter and have loads of followers, you might decide, you know, particularly if you have a social media product, you might decide that Twitter is an important part of your marketing strategy. But for someone like me, I found Twitter is totally hopeless for marketing. And I've concentrated on other things like AdWords and creating content and things that I can do because I like writing, I like AdWords. So different things work for different people. So the idea of the course is try and give you an appreciation of all your sort of options and strategies and give you a grounding in all the basics. And then after that, you really have to go out and do your own thing and find out what works for you in your particular market. And that involves a lot of experimentation. So I've tried loads and loads of different things with Perfect Table Plan, and you know, some of them have worked and some of them haven't.
Some of the courses kind of the online one, alternative online ones that you've mentioned, a lot of them focus on kind of building an audience first before, you know, you build or release a product. Whereas your approach for Perfect Table Plan was different back then. Would you go with the approach of building an audience now, or would you kind of take the same approach of get the product out there and perhaps use, because again, back 10 years ago, Google AdWords were a lot cheaper, weren't they? It's harder to find cheaper traffic these days.
Yeah, AdWords was great 10 years ago. You know, you could get lots of traffic reasonably well targeted very cheaply. Sadly, that's not true. I find it still quite good. I mean, in the early days of Perfect Table Plan, I was probably getting at least 25% of my sales through AdWords, but now it's more like 5 or 10%. So it was pretty important to me early on. I mean building an audience, I mean, as I'm sure you know yourself, it's not easy. You know, it's hard work and it takes time, and the hardest thing about the software business is getting noticed. You know, any sort of reasonably competent programmer given enough time can create a piece of software that they can think of. So if you can think of something, given enough time, you can probably create something that does that if you're reasonably competent. I mean, the tools are pretty good now. So that's sort of a known quantity, but the unknown quantity is, you know, can you actually get anyone's attention? Because there are millions of other people jumping up and down trying to get everybody's attention. And that's the really hard thing. So I've tended to... The course concentrates a lot on online marketing and trying to get people's attention, because that's the hardest problem to solve in my experience. And also it's the one that people who bootstrap companies generally have least experience in, because they're usually developers with a programming background. I've yet to meet anyone who's a marketer who learns programming and then bootstraps a company. They're pretty much all people with technical or programming backgrounds who are trying to learn some marketing. And the marketing is really important. That if you can't get the marketing right, you've got very little chance of succeeding. But I mean, the good news is you're mostly up against other marketing people, and they're generally not as clever as developers. So that's what I'd like to believe anyway. So I mean, you don't have to be brilliant at it, but if you don't put any effort into the marketing, to finding an audience, to creating an audience, then your chances of succeeding are very slim. You may be one of these outlier people who's lucky, but you know, it's a bit of a lottery ticket.
So from the communities that you hang out on online, the Joel on Software forums and the Bootstrapped forums, you know, Perfect Table Plan is often held up as a great case study for, you know, a good way of doing it in terms of building a product and the lifestyle business and sticking to the vision of wanting to keep to that lifestyle business. But it can't have all been plain sailing. What were some of the struggles been, or dark points, during the last 10 years?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it has involved a certain amount of luck, because when you start out, you can't possibly know everything. You know, there's a whole sea of sort of information out there that you just don't know. You know, you don't know what your competitors are doing, what they're planning, how many customers they've got, how much money they're making, you know, what the stuff is that people don't like about their products they might like about yours. There's so much that you don't know. So it takes a bit of a leap of faith to create a product. And I think the key thing is to just try and get something out there as quickly as possible. Far too many people are sort of developing things in secrecy, because, you know, they're afraid someone's going to steal your idea, which, to be honest, is the least of your worries. You know, the biggest problem is that nobody's going to care when you release it. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of luck involved. I mean, in terms of the dark sort of The dark early days. Yeah, it was tough early on. I mean, I remember I accidentally stumbled across a post I made on the Business of Software forum saying, oh, you know, I'm working 60 hours a week, making less money than if I was flipping burgers. You know, I hope this is going to work out. or it was something to that effect. You know, this was in the very early days of Perfect Table Plan. And I had no idea whether it would be successful or not. You know, it was just a case of throw it out there, see what happens. If it doesn't work, try something else. And it was actually much more successful than I expected. You know, not everything I've worked on has been, but that certainly was. I think probably the lowest point, the two lows that stick to my mind are, firstly, trying to get it certified in the Works with Vista program. Microsoft had this Works with Vista where you could get a little logo, and I thought, well, that might help with conversion rates and get me some additional attention in the Microsoft market. So I paid a few hundred pounds for this Authenticode certificate, which they then said you can't use to actually sign your software. You're going to use it for this Works with Vista program. And then I jumped through all these hoops, and the whole process was so broken. You know, broken links on the website. You download the signing tool, and it had a password, but they didn't tell you what the password was on it, so you could unzip it. You know, it was just the website was just derelict. It was just shocking how bad it was. But you know, as I'd paid all this money, and I didn't have a lot of money at the time, I sort of pushed on through. And I think I was nearly in tears at one point of frustration because it was so bad. And then I finally got the right to put this crummy little logo on my website, and somebody emailed me the next day and said, oh, does it only work with Vista then? Does that mean it doesn't work on XP? And I nearly cried. So that was a particular low point. Thank you, Microsoft. And then the other one that I thought in the early days, I thought, well, the only way I can make a living at this is if I sell it through one of the big companies, like if I can get into the gift list department of John Lewis or Debenhams, and I sell hundreds of CDs through them. And so I had 1,000 CDs burnt and put into packaging and seller wrapped in nice DVD boxes that a friend of mine designed, because you had to get quite a lot done to get the unit cost down low. And so I had this 1,000 burnt. I tried really hard to get into all these retailers without much success. I managed to sell the sum through wedding shops and on online places. But and then I sold about 100, I think. And then I found quite a major bug to do with fonts in a very early version of Perfect Table. And my wife and I sat there and we stripped off the cellophane off 900 remaining CD boxes, threw the CDs away and kept the boxes. And then I had to order more CDs, put them in and resello wrap them as we sold them. But I didn't make that mistake again. I only ordered them in small batches after that. So I think sitting there and stripping off those 900 CDs, that was probably the lowest point.
It's funny how times have changed with CDs and physical sale products, isn't it? Certainly made our lives a lot easier.
Yeah, I still sell a few CDs, but I mean, I used to sell about one in three customers used to buy a CD, and now I might sell one or two a week. It's very few, you know. So I think as soon as I finish the current batch of 100 CDs, that's it. I'm not even going to bother offering CDs anymore. But I have sold thousands of them. There are thousands of Perfect Table Plan CDs out there.
So in terms of desktop apps, have you been tempted to jump on board the SaaS revolution?
Yeah, every time I'm going to get a T-shirt printed that says, no, I'm not going to do a SaaS app. Because every time I go to conferences and things, that's the first thing people ask me. I mean, obviously, I've seriously thought about it. There's various reasons that I haven't gone down that road. I mean, because it's just me, I would have to split my effort between doing a SaaS app and a web app. And because Perfect Table Plan is written in C++ and a lot of its user interface, it's very sort of user interface intensive. I'd have to pretty much rewrite it from scratch to get it to work on the web. And the thought of rewriting 100,000 lines of code and then particularly cannibalizing my own sales at the same time, it just doesn't really appeal. And the other thing is I try to do things that I would find interesting, and the thought of just rewriting it all for the web just bores me to tears.
But even Hyperplan's a desktop app, though, isn't it?
It is. And The thing is that I'm a very experienced desktop programmer. I can produce things very fast. Desktop, I don't have much experience in web programming. It would take me much longer. So my decision was with Hyperplan was I'm going to test the concept as a desktop app. And then if it's successful and enough people want it, I might potentially pay somebody to create a SaaS version. Or potentially I could even do it as a sort of a client server with a you know, a hosted back end, or so I don't know. That's very much up in the air at the moment. But I mean, I actually tried the other day to write a small JavaScript web app, and I just hated it. JavaScript's just disgusting, I think. You know, yeah. C++ has its quirks and weaknesses, but you know, it's strongly typed, it has very good tools, you get a good debugger, and the signals and slots mechanism that sits on top of the Qt library that I use is extremely powerful. So between C++ and Qt, you can, you know, it's extremely comprehensive. You know, it's a really big, powerful tool set that you can do an awful lot with. And to move from that to JavaScript was just, I don't know, it was a bit of a shock.
It sounds similar to me because I'm from a Microsoft .NET Visual Studio background, and the tooling for that is fantastic, and it being a strongly typed language and so on. But kind of the Microsoft stuff isn't very coolly looked on in the bootstrapping community. It's all Ruby on Rails, PHP and so on. So a number of times I've tried to learn another language, as much from an interest point of view, but from going Visual Studio and it being strongly typed to using Notepad, and
yeah,
it's just like, I don't think these guys realise what they're missing from having such powerful tools and the speed it can help you do stuff. But anyway.
No, so I mean, obviously, I mean, of the various ideas I've got, I tend to be drawn to more towards the ones that work as desktop apps. And the thing is now that most things are moving towards the web. So if you produce a desktop app, then you've got less competition generally. Mm. So, I mean, in the table planning market, I think last time I checked, I had something like about 130 competitors or something, which was other applications that were either table planners or included some element of table planning in them. I think, yeah, 130, 150 or something. And almost all of them are web-based. So if somebody wants a desktop-based table planner, I only have, you know, a handful of competitors. Whereas if somebody wants a web-based table planner, you know, if I created one, I'd have at least 100 competitors, and most of them are free. You know, they're given away by wedding websites to try and get your email address so they can flog you other stuff. Mm. But I mean, part of marketing is just being different. If you try and just follow the crowd and do what everyone else is doing, then it's very hard to stand out and be noticed. Whereas if you're doing something a little bit different, the other thing is it's boring to just follow the crowd, I think, and just do what everyone else is doing. You know, that doesn't really interest me.
So what does the future hold? How far do you kind of plan and think in advance in terms of features for existing products or new products, new ideas?
Well, I mean, as a one-man band, it takes me, you know, a fair amount of time plodding away on things to achieve things. So, you know, I've got loads of work to do on Perfect Table Plan and Hyper Plan. I mean, I've got another sort of two ideas for potential products, but, you know, I don't see me starting on those anytime soon. And you know, also, I'm spread pretty thin in between, you know, two products and blogging and a little bit of consulting and training and, you know, organizing meetups and, you know, all of those things and trying to have a personal life. So I'm spread pretty thin as it is without taking on anything new.
How much, this is jumping around a little bit, sorry, how much support time does support take up for? Answering emails and so on.
Yeah, I can. I mean, when I'm on holiday and things, I can generally get away with less than an hour a day. I mean, I tend to actually solicit, you know, I'm quite proactive in getting feedback. So anybody that buys Hyperplan or Perfect Table Plan will get an email a week later saying, you know, what did you like or not like? What could we do better? So I do actively solicit feedback. But also I try very hard. As soon as two or three people have said, you know, there's something about the product they don't like, I think about if there's a way that I could engineer out that problem, you know, make it go away so I don't get any more support emails about that in future. So despite the fact that, you know, there's a large number of people out there using Perfect Table Plan, I don't get a huge number of support emails.
Fantastic. Well, Andy, thanks very much for your time today. Really enjoyed catching up.
Okay. Well, thank you. I've enjoyed that.
If people want to get in contact or find out more about Perfect Table Plan and Hyper Plan on your blog, what's the URL? How can people get in contact?
Perfect Table Plan is perfecttableplan.com, Hyperplan is hyperplan.com, and the blog is successfulsoftware.net. And if anyone's interested in the training course, just click on the training tab. And if anyone's interested in the meetup in Swindon, then have a look on my blog. I will publish something nearer the time, or go to the meet, I think it's meetups.com, isn't it? And
yep.
Look for Bootstrappers Southwest.
Fantastic. Andy, thanks again. You off for a run now? Is that part of your, what's next in your day?
I think probably yes, might do actually. Quick run around the lake and then back to doing some real work.
Andy, thanks again, and look forward to catching up at the next meetup.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Bye.
Cheers, bye.